Now, I'm going to talk just briefly about some of the litigation that's going on. There have been a lot of developments. I assume that most of you know what this Armstrong case was, as I briefly indicated. It was about these documents of Ron's and whether the public should see them. Well, court said yes, after spending 2 months, court looking through the documents said, yeah, the public's got to see them. They have a right to see them. So the church appealed, enough to pardon me, but it's like, well, the church appealed. And remember, all illness results in connection to a suppressed procedure. So either you guys are the SPs or I'm the SP. Anyway. The documents the judge ordered to be released after making the findings that I indicated to you. The church first appealed to the Appeals Court of California. They lost. They appealed for reconsideration to the Appeals Court of California. They lost. They appealed to the Supreme Court of California. They lost. They moved for reconsideration to the Supreme Court of California. They lost. All trying to prevent the documents from being released. They then went over to the Federal District Court, which is like a different jurisdiction within our judicial framework, and filed a lawsuit against the Superior Court of California, which is a state court, trying to get federal law to intervene to prevent the documents from being released. They lost. They appealed that to the federal appellate court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. They lost. They appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States, and they lost. They then filed a whole new type of lawsuit called a Rhodes action, which, and this was done just recently, trying to prevent the documents from being released on the grounds that even if Mary Sue Hubbard's and L. Ron Hubbard's and the church's privacy interests can't override the right of the public to see these documents, the rights of third parties who are mentioned in the documents, some of the documents have rather scandalous language in them about intimate aspects of PC's lives that were called by, and there'd be one full. And so then they brought up the issue of the rights of third parties to protect the documents, which is now in the appellate. They lost in the State Court of California, and that is now up in the Appeals Court of California. So here we are, coming up on 1 year after the trial that we spent 2 months on to get the documents released. The church has spent, I don't know, over $1 million, I'd estimate, in attorney's fees trying to prevent Ron's documents from being shown to you. And that's where it now sits. Hopefully, they're also going to lose this round, and the documents will be released. That's the Armstrong case. The church has brought about 16 legal proceedings against me, including 13 lawsuits, 3 contempt actions, two motions for disqualification, and a variety of other things. It should add up to 6, that's 13, 15, and I'm forgetting some. About 3 contempt actions, 13 lawsuits. Right. Of the 13 lawsuits, 10 have been dismissed today. They keep bringing them. For example, I gave a speech in June 1983 to the Phoenix Group in Los Angeles. And I predicted that they'd sue me for it, which they did. And because when I speak, they don't want me to speak, obviously. They don't want me to try a case. Whenever I try to appear in a case, they immediately try to prevent me from appearing for whatever reason. So they sued me for that, on that case. And in that speech, some of you, I'm sure, were there, you know, I said a lot of things. They took one little thing in the speech, which I'm sure most people didn't even hear. And they sued me on that, on the grounds that you could draw an inference from this one thing that was not true. And the speech was, my memory is roughly a 2-hour speech, maybe more. So, last Monday, rather significantly, in that particular case, a federal judge ordered L. Ron Hubbard to appear for his deposition to be taken on March 19th. Now, what the court will do if Braun doesn't show, I don't know. There's a lot of different sanctions that could be imposed, and we'll probably know after March 19th. But I would hazard a guess that Ron is not going to show up. And why he's not going to show up is an issue in itself. I'm sure Mary Sue would probably like to talk to him. She hasn't apparently seen him in the last 4 or 5 years, if you believe her affidavit. In my judgment, Ron's got something to hide. That's why he's not showing up. He doesn't want to confront his problem, if that's something, because he's created a lot of problems. And he's left a trail of victims. There are many Paulette Cooper, who was one of the bigger ones. And I think that to try to confront the havoc that's been wreaked would be a pretty difficult thing at this point in time. So Ron, I doubt on March 19th is going to show. And hopefully, after he doesn't show, the case will be disposed of. Right after the Armstrong case, in an effort to shut up Laurel Sullivan, who was L. Ron Hubbard's PR worldwide. Some of you may know who she is. And she was a high-ranking member of Ron Seahorn. She was with him on the boat from 67 or so, whenever the boat started. And until he disappeared in March 1980. She knew, she testified in the Armstrong case, that during the 70s, she gradually learned as his PR that all the things that were being disseminated about him were all lies. She said, well, it just became part of the game at the top. I mean, if they told the truth, that Ron really wasn't a nuclear physicist, that he really didn't do all these things, then they would have to confront the fact that early on those lies were made. See, that's the real crunch. It isn't just simply, okay, he didn't graduate from George Washington University. It's confronting the fact that why were those lies created in the first place? And that was the problem. So they created more lies. And they're still creating lies to deal with the lies that they created in the beginning that they couldn't confront. So Laurel basically testified to that. She spent so many days in the witness stand. So to shut Laurel up, they immediately brought a lawsuit against her. They sued me again. They sued Laurel. They sued a lawyer in my office. And they sued my brother, Kevin. Well, that suit got thrown out. That suit got thrown out roughly a month or so ago. That was in the newspaper. But that's indicative of their methodology. Fortunately, in that case, Laurel was defended by the United States government. The reason she, which is the first time that the government has ever interceded to defend, in any Scientology action at least, someone who is. And the reason it did is pretty simple, is because when the government found out what Laurel knew, which they found out from the transcripts in the Armstrong case, they did what any legitimate person who's trying to confront the truth would do, or entity. They began to investigate what's been going on here. Where's all the money going? Why are all these lies disseminated? Who's running this place? So that's what they're doing. Now, investigating through the criminal division of the Internal Revenue Service all the financial transactions. So, just as they sued Gerald Armstrong, they sued Laurel Sullivan, anyone who tries to confront the facts is going to get attacked by them. It's that simple. And the reason they attack is because they're SPs, they can't confront the truth. Other lawsuits. The Christofferson trial, which some of you may remember. 1979 trial. girl who was involved with the Church of Scientology for a relatively short period of time left, went to a lawyer named Gary McMurray in Portland, Oregon, sued the church, got a $2 million judgment. She was only involved for, I think my memory is 7 months, roughly 7 months, paid $3,000. She was like many people who got involved on a relatively low level with this organization. The jury, this was all before the Washington documents, the documents seized by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in 1977, were released to the public. That release took place in November 1980. Trial was tried in September 1979. So the Washington documents, the Guardian's office heavy duty docs, the red box data, the vetting hat write-up, all the stuff dealing with concealing all their criminal activity, never came into evidence. The jury saw actually very little evidence in that case, but they saw the fair game doctrine. They saw some of the lies. And like most people of common sense, which I understand tonight is being copyrighted. Natural wisdom and common sense is being copyrighted by someone in the group. Most jurors of common sense said, well, wait a minute. You shouldn't have a fairly large organization out taking money from people on these representations. Now, maybe person A, when they joined the organization, didn't rely on the representation whether Ron was a nuclear physicist. Maybe they did it because they were saving the planet. And maybe person B relied on it because he had an engineering background, and so he thought, well, this guy is a nuclear physicist, and this is all scientifically documented and certified, blah, blah, blah. So I am going to rely on it. People with different motives for doing different things. But the jurors, I think, basically felt that when you got this large organization and it's taking in that much money, they got a responsibility. The knowledge, responsibility, communication triangle. They got a responsibility to communicate the knowledge as it is. They can't go out saying that Ron's a graduate of George Washington University when he's not. They can't go out saying that PC information given up in session is confidential when they got a group of hoodlums in the back room calling everyone's file. You can't do it. You shouldn't do it. You can't state things on a policy-wide level and take people's money and not expect them to be a little upset when they find out that they've been ripped off. So the jury came down with a big verdict because the jury was mad. They said, no, we don't want people ripped off. If an organization as large and monolithic as this is going to have this kind of power, then they got to tell the truth. And we don't want fair game doctrines. We don't want people following us everywhere we go. I've been followed for weeks now. Carloads of private detectives following me. I mean, you might say, well, maybe Flynn's a little bit paranoid. Maybe they're not following me. But believe me, they're following me. And we don't want fair game doctrines that incite the FSMs to go out and engage in that kind of conduct. We just simply don't want that to happen in our society. Maybe it was acceptable in the 13th century. But, you know, in 1984, 1985, we've got to do something to say that it's not acceptable. Just like in a product liability case, if Ford builds a car that has a defective gas tank so that a little fender bender, the car explodes, society says we've got to do something about that. So one of the ways things are done is through the legal system, where a jury can speak out and say, this is wrong, get it corrected. Well, Ron learned early on that you can use the legal system to harass people when you got a lot of money and you can hire a bevy of lawyers and private investigators. You can use it to subdue them. And that's what Miscavige and Broker and his group are doing. Everyone who tries to speak out, correct injustices. They figure out some way to stomp on them by one means or another, whether it's bringing 16 lawsuits, or having them followed around, or having anonymous phone calls in the middle of the night, and telling them you've murdered someone, writing Freedom Magazine articles that you break women's legs and you forge $2 million checks, or paying millions of dollars to private investigators to set up that type of thing. That's fair game, John. And it's apparently still viable in the minds of somebody in this organization. And so that jury said no. Unfortunately, the appellate court reversed it on the grounds that there was a bad jury instruction. The jury was improperly instructed on First Amendment grounds with regard to their religious rights. So it got reversed, new trial. The trial began Monday. Only now in that trial, Martin Samuels, who some of you may have heard of, who ran, he was one of the more successful financially Scientologists in the world, Martin Samuels has come forward, went to the government up there, went to the attorneys in the case, came to me, and said the defense that we put up back in 1979 was mostly perjured. It was all controlled by the GO and Mary Sue, and all those things we said in the witness stand about Ron not controlling the GO, and the GO not controlling the Portland Org, or the Delphi Foundation, it's all a lie. GO controlled us right from the beginning. All our money went right to them. They made all the significant decisions. And when we said there was no fair game doctrine, there was. And we said, when we said the organization does not cull PC files, there was. See, but at that, back in the original trial, the Guardian Program Order 121669 that I referred to had never come out. That was seized by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Later on, as the Armstrong document showed, and as other people came forward, we learned that the practice was prevalent throughout the organization. But now they've got that type of evidence. So the truth is a spillover effect. The truth is gradually coming out, as long as you keep fighting for it. And that's what justice is. So the Armstrong, the Christofferson trial is just going back to trial. The trial began Monday. It's probably going to take about 5 to 7 weeks. Only now there's more evidence than ever before. Their manipulations didn't work. So they lost the Armstrong trial. They lost this decision in England, this custody decision, which some of you may have heard about. The judge in England, he said things like, grimly reminiscent of Hitler and his henchmen, referring to this group that runs this church. That's pretty strong language. That's the mind of an English jurist saying, this stuff is outrageous. They lost the tax court decision. CSC got stripped of its tax exemption because the court found that Hubbard was in control, monies were illegally being diverted to him. They were spending money for illegal purposes, like breaking into federal offices. So they lost the tax court exemption. The Van Schaick trial, which is the trial that I'm involved in, comes up on June 10. The Hartwell trial comes up on September 25th of this year. We've been waiting for years, 5 years, for some of these trials to begin. We believe that a lot of this evidence, as came out in the Armstrong case, as came out in the English decision, as came out in the tax court decision, as is going to come out in Christofferson, is going to be stable datum. It's going to show what happened with this organization, how it went wrong. There are people in California and throughout the United States that were involved in this organization, like you, and you're among them, who can correct some of these wrongs. You can do something about it. There are some people who write, like Fred Stansfield. There are some people who take them on with the courage of Ben Cordon and fight them in the courts. The likelihood of winning is overwhelming, because truth is on your side. All you've got to do is to do the same thing you do in an auditing session, confront it. The terror that this organization tries to disseminate is only the terror in their own hearts, because they know they've got something to hide. And if people like yourself, on every level, simply confront this group, whoever this is running this organization, engaging in this type of conduct with your money, whoever that group is, they can be disbanded. And the terror can stop. And when the terror stops on their part, the fear of people like yourselves who can be inflicted with that terror will stop. And that's the level of confront, in my judgment, that's got to take place. And it's got to take place in every dealing that you have with them. That's basically what I've got to say. Samuels is in one of the most unique and also right now judicially powerful positions of anyone in the world for a number of reasons. He only sued L. Ron Hubbard. The reason he sued L. Ron Hubbard is because he thought L. Ron Hubbard did what was done to him. Took his money, put it in foreign bank accounts, controls the organization, sends his agents out to do what has been done. So he sued Hubbard. The church, he didn't sue because the church, in all this litigation, acts as a front for Ron. It interposes the lawyers, pays the lawyers, prevents you from getting at the heart of the problem by immersing you in years of litigation, in which basic facts of the matter get lost in the scuffle. So he sued Ron. A major decision had to be made when the church tried to intervene into the case. Say, no, sue us. We want to be sued. So we can defend the case and protect Ron. The trial court said, no, you can't intervene. He's got to come forward and defend himself. He can't hide behind Mary Sue's skirt. He can't hide behind corporate fronts. He's got to come forward and answer these allegations as to whether or not all these funds have been taken, as to whether these five pages of lies were really perpetrated by him. He's got to answer them. The appellate court in Oregon, which they appealed to, then ruled that the trial court was right. Ron's got to appear. The church can't defend him. That decision was roughly around the beginning of the year. They're now petitioning, which is going to be the last place they can go, to the Supreme Court of Oregon. They can try the Supreme Court of the United States, but an issue like this, that'll get nowhere. So Martin Samuels is literally one signature away from being the first person to have a default judgment against L. Ron Hubbard, where he can't fall back on his corporate fronts to protect him. And that one signature could come within, the signature of the judge in the Supreme Court of Oregon, if he upholds what the appellate court in Oregon has done and denies intervention,
then Ron will be defaulted. And it's a multi-million dollar case. That's the status of that.
How far off is that? It might be.
I'd say 30 days. Yeah, if you've sent in the organization a level of intensity that foments this type of thing, and of them having serious problems, I mean real serious problems, your sense is correct. They're in serious trouble. The cycle of nature toward discarding false things is now, in my judgment, taking place with regard to this organization. Yes, sir?
What I don't quite understand is the IRS knows that they have a lot of money to gain by pressing their suits and all the back taxes and everything. Whether they, it's like it's taken them 12, 15 years just to finally get 71, 72 years out of the way. And I can't believe that they couldn't find Ron, A, you know, if they really wanted to, and really indict and, you know, take it to court and prove their case. It just doesn't, it seems to be beyond credibility how long they're taking and why they're doing it if they feel they have such a good case against him with all the witnesses, you know, testimonies, past staff members or whatever.
There are two cases involving the Internal Revenue. One, the case that you're referring to against CSC, the Church of Scientology in California, covers the tax years 70 to 72 that have been litigated. But the tax years 73 to 75, they've made an assessment on. The trial took place in 1980-81. The appeal and the decision on that trial didn't come down until then. Until last September. The length of time involved in that relates to the amount of money you have to stave off a judicial inquiry. It's akin to the rapist going out and rape, committing rape, but then having enough bail to be even released back in the street again. Now you say, well, but if he's regularly engaging in rapes, why don't they just put him in jail pending the trial and not let him back on the street? Well, the answer, that's not the law. The only issue in a bail proceeding is whether you're going to show up for the trial, not whether you did it or didn't do it. Because you're presumed innocent until proven guilty. So, CSC has mounted armies of lawyers to stave off the IRS, stave off the results of the investigation and the judicial decision so that they can keep their business going. They keep the money coming in. And when you got that amount of money, you can do it. Now the second thing that the IRS is now looking into is a criminal investigation of L. Ron Hubbard. Prior investigation related to the Church of Scientology of California and whether or not it should be have its tax exemption removed. These are the same people that went after Al Capone. And it's a criminal investigation, and I would expect it would go a lot faster. But the basic answer to your question is the wheels of justice grind slowly. But they grind pretty fine.
Well, that's what I mean, they already established in Yerman, right?
Yep.
That already tied in Ron Hubbard.
Right, but you've got to prove tax evasion in the criminal act. See, what you prove when you prove a Norman is you prove that they violated their corporate religious charter because no part of the net profit or the net earnings of any charitable organization under the federal regulations on the subject can inure to the benefit of a private shareholder. That's what the law said. And it did. Went to Ron through Operation Transport Corporation, Religious Research Foundation, Hubbard Exploration Company. All those corporations laundered money for Ron. So the annulment issue related to whether or not they could maintain their charitable status, religious status, under the tax-exempt laws. But just because you prove annulment doesn't necessarily mean that you prove tax evasion, unless he didn't report it on his own income tax. Now, that level of proof with regard to, you think that one goes, one follows. But the problem becomes in terms of evidence tracing specific funds into specific foreign bank accounts as to whether those bank accounts are controlled by Ron or not. And for the tax years 70, 71, and 72, the Internal Revenue Service would be, at this point, starting a criminal investigation now, unable to proceed in an income tax, federal income tax evasion criminal case against Hubbard. What they would need is evidence probably in the last 6 years under the statute of limitations. So that evidence that goes back to that period, although it has probative value, useful value for the civil case, the tax exempt status case, it probably does not have value with regard to proving a criminal case. I'm not sure I'm making myself clear, but there are two different, one's a proceeding on their tax exempt status, one's a proceeding on income tax evasion because you didn't admit on your income tax return that you received $100 million for that. And the investigation that is now taking place is into that. The investigation that took place for those tax years in 70, 71, 72 was into the annulment issue to him. But for them to open up those tax years on his personal income tax return in a criminal case won't happen. That's just the way it works.
Well, how about to establish?
You kind of got a point. Really, you think that one could prove the other, but one's a civil case, one's a criminal case.
Well, how about establishing a precedent? Like those 71, 72 years were very lean for Scientology, considering the increase in donations, I mean.
Well, CSC. On that audit, and I'm not really sure of his figure. It's in the range of $3 or $4 million that they felt taxes were due on. But that was just monies that went through CSC. What they're learning now, because of the new evidence, is that RRF, Religious Research Foundation, was incorporated in Liberia by Kemah Douglas in 1972. And that took over the laundering of monies beginning in 1972 from the Operation Transport Corporation, which laundered money between 1968 and 1972, and before that it was the Hubbard Exploration Company that laundered the funds.